So if you paid attention this morning when you came in and you picked up your communion, our party sign today is set to not relax. This is a moment of enjoyment. But it's not an enjoyment moment like, woohoo, we're going to celebrate and run up and down the aisles and do all of this crazy stuff. This is a moment that pretty much all of us know something about. It's a moment that I've been outside working really, really, really hard, and I got so involved in what I was doing that I missed my lunch. Okay? And I continued working, and I continued going, and just went and went and went and went. And now it's dinner time. And I'm hungry. No, I'm really, really hungry. Almost to the point that I feel like I might be starving to death if I don't find something to eat really quickly. So you come to the table, and those moments are kind of awesome because it doesn't really matter what's for dinner because there's food. There's something there for me to eat. And this year, if you remember, we've been talking about this concept of pursuing God. And as we continue our journey, we start with that moment. That moment that we call hunger. And the thing is if you know anything about the way that I get hungry, I don't just get hungry. I have this thing, I get hangry. Now you're chuckling because you kind of maybe know what that term means. It is a combination of two words. Hunger meets anger. It's not a new word. Did you know that word was actually coined in 1918? It's been around a long time. It just didn't really gather common appreciation until about the 21st century. But here's what's going on in hangry. Your hunger is making you increasingly upset and irritable and angry. And the thing is, usually when you get in this mode, like I said, you don't care what you're eating. All you care about is food. So you come in and dinner's not quite ready yet, but you're done. So what do you do? You binge eat. Yeah, I know, dinner's almost ready, but I'll be okay. I'm so hungry, I can eat snacks and then eat dinner to go with it, and I'll probably want to have some snacks after dinner, right? So you begin to binge eating, which means that you fling open the cabinet, and you grab a snack. And man, you wolf it down, and it tasted so good, but I'm still hungry. There's still this empty, so... What do you do? Yeah, you grab another, right? It doesn't satisfy you, so you grab another. And then you eat that one, and you're still hungry, and so what do? You grab another and another. I mean, there are all kind of snacks in the cabinets. I can just sample, right? And then before you know it, you're standing there or you're sitting there, and you're looking at a pile of balled-up wrappers. And then it begins to dawn on you. This was a mistake. Not because of the stomach ache that you're going to have from eating all the junk food. It's because now you're looking at the good stuff on the table. And you filled yourself with the wrong thing. And the thing that you filled yourself with means that after dinner is all over and you didn't really eat that dinner, you're going to be sitting in front of the TV and you're going to be hungry again, and then you're not going to eat dinner. What are you going to do? Back to the cabinet you go, and on and on and on it goes. And while this is describing hunger, it's a perfect, picture-perfect way that we live our life. It's how we live our spiritual life. We feel empty and frustrated. I've been honest about it. That's how I felt come Friday. Man, I was empty and I was frustrated. I was done, okay? It had been a hard week. It had been a long week. And when you get that way, you see the hole in the middle of our world. By the way, that's not actually me. I don't turn into that creature when I get hungry. Although my family may think that's me when I get hungry, okay? I don't like more for anything. But you notice that hole is in the middle of that creature? That's how we get spiritually sometimes. There's just something missing. Spiritually speaking, we feel hunger and we can't quite name what's missing. Have you ever been at that moment? You just feel like spiritually you're starved. There's something that's not there. You want something, but I can't put my finger on it. I can't wrap my brain around it. I know there's a hole, but what do I put in it to make it work? So we begin to stuff. Sometimes it is food. A lot of times it's just pleasure. Sometimes I try to fill that hole with achievement, accomplishment. Sometimes I feel it with work. I try to work more and get more involved things and put more things on my calendar so that that hole just goes away. Sometimes, you know what I try to fill that hole with? Distraction. You ever had one of those tired, exhausting weeks and you get home and all that's there is the couch, the TV, and a bag of chips? Plop, click, rip, crunch. Matt did the little fell asleep thing in the back. You didn't get to see it online, but it's hilarious. And you know, spiritually speaking, that's what we do. I don't reach for the good stuff that God's given me. I reach for the junk food that the world has provided me. And then I just can't figure out, why am I so hungry? None of the things that I consumed were actually bad for me. But they aren't the ultimate things that God planned for me. And so we reach for just something, anything. And when that something or anything doesn't satisfy, we assume the problem isn't what we're eating, it's how much we're eating, right? You realize TV is a trap because you're going to eat that bag of chips, and as you're watching the next episode, well, I need another bag of chips, and so back we go, and you've been there. And again, by the time you're finished eating, watching the show, you've got about three little bags of 1 ounce chips sitting beside you, and you convince yourself, I only had a serving. Yeah, but you kept going back. See, we begin to consume more. In our spiritual life, we begin to chase harder, and we gorge ourselves on activities, events, work, family, responsibilities. We just keep stuffing. And we are convinced the next thing I stuff in is going to satisfy the problem, but let's be honest with you, it never does. I mean, maybe for a little while, just a little bitty glimpse of it, I feel like, okay, that satisfied me. But it doesn't last. And this is not a new problem. Author Ravi Zacharias once said, the loneliest moment in life is when you experience that which you thought would deliver the ultimate, and it lets you down. Of course, how old is this problem? Well, 16th century author Augustine said it this way, you have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. I can stuff and stuff and stuff and stuff, but until I embrace God, it's not going to work. How old is this problem? David understood this problem. We're going to be in Psalm chapter 63, if you wish to grab a Bible out the pew rack there, and that's where we're going to turn. And this is a prayer of a man that is living in a desert. And who discovered what his soul is actually hungry for. So, going to start right at the beginning. We're going to start right there at Psalm chapter 63, verse 1. You God are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you when my whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water. Again, this is where context makes sense. Where's David? He's in the desert. He is describing what he is living in physically, but he is applying it to how he is feeling spiritually. And the psalm opens up with a declaration, not a strength. David needs something. And the thing is, David doesn't start with solutions. He starts with this idea of, I am honest that what I am doing is not fixing my problems. He says, I thirst. There we go. Well, I think where we're going. I think I messed up. He says, I thirst. And he follows it up with this idea, I got to see where I am, that we are now independent people. He follows it up with the idea that my whole being that makes up the soul issue, it's hard for us because we are now, I'm back where I'm supposed to be. I'm sorry. I messed up my slides this week. I told you it was a busy week. So you got extra words for the song slides, and I'm missing some words for the sermon slide. We'll be okay. We are indeed independent people, aren't we? It's hard for me to admit when I've got things wrong with my life. It's difficult for me to understand the idea. We don't like admitting weakness. Are you there? I don't like admitting that I can't fix my own problems. But here, David refuses to pretend. Over and over and over again, he reminds us that I don't like saying I need help. But then reality starts to set in. And we get to this idea that we're small. I mean, think about this. I am one person in a vast world of billions of people. And my planet is one planet in a space that we can't even fathom how big it is. How on earth can I actually think I can do all of this by myself? I'm sort of small. And when I begin to think about things, I understand that I am dependent. Can I really do all this stuff by myself? If you've ever watched me try to build anything, I can't build by myself. I have an issue where I'm really weak in this eye and strong in this eye. Therefore, I put the nail on the wood, and I go to swing the hammer, and I think I'm right on the spot. And I know we're close to nail, because when I look down at the nail, I think it's in one spot, but my depth perception. So, and you know what I usually end up hitting, right? Myself. I'm dependent. If I want something built, I have to ask somebody. And therefore, believe it or not, that makes us needy. I have things with my life that are broken. I need stuff. I need stuff from other people. I need stuff from God. I can't make oxygen, right? I can't hold the world where it is. I need you guys, and I need God. And not only do we struggle to admit that we're hungry, we struggle more to know what's going to satisfy that hunger. That's a legitimate struggle that each and every person has. So again, we stuff ourselves with whatever we can get our hands on. But Psalm 63 acts kind of like one of those signposts, one of those moments that we get to feel the ache, one of those moments that we get to hear somebody else longing, somebody else being restless, somebody else thirsty. It was put there on purpose. It's trying to call our attention to the idea that I was not designed to not just do this alone in the church. This church was not designed to do it by itself. Paul picks up on this theme as he gets to Acts chapter 17. It reads this way. For one man he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. Though he is not far off from any one of us. So this idea that we are all connected at some point, and all of us go back to this one family, but that family through time has been separated. We've developed differences. Language barriers, diet barriers, belief barriers. And it says that one of the things in the accomplishment is when I begin to realize how needy I am, and I can't begin to realize that nobody else can actually meet all of my needs, now I'm ready to consider who God is. But I do want you to pay really close attention to how David said there in Psalm chapter 63, verse 1. How did David seek God? Earnestly. Now, that means it's not casually. He didn't do this when it was convenient. It's not there's nothing better going on, so I think today I can squeeze God into the schedule. Earnestly simply means that it becomes your focal point. David is not browsing for God like someone killing time, thumbing through the headlines on the phone. Anybody else pick this habit up? Not only do I sit there and watch television, okay, I'm now sitting there and I've got my drink and I've got my chips and now I've got my phone. So I'm watching TV. You're laughing. Why are you laughing? Because y'all are doing the same thing. You realize what you're doing. You're splitting your focus. You're taking your focus on two things. And the trap of that is you're not allowed to focus on anything. And this is how, again, we do things spiritually. Yeah, God, I got you. I'm reading. But I'm reading while I'm driving. That's a really bad idea. Okay, I'm listening to what I'm reading while I'm driving. Okay, that gets better. Okay, yeah, I'm praying, but I'm also going to do this, this, and this. David says, no, I'm doing this earnestly. It is the only thing I'm doing. It has got all of my attention. And so he's searching like someone dying of thirst in the desert, which guess what? He is. Physically, that's where David is. And we often learn to seek God earnestly when we finally become honest about how badly we need him. And that's why Psalm 63 is important to us. Because it doesn't diagnose the hunger. It promises satisfaction. So if you've had some self-control and you come in one of those hangry moments and you're willing to rein yourself in by a little bit more and you wait for the table to be set and you eat the meal, doesn't that meal taste awesome? It fills you up. It satisfies you. So the question becomes is, what does a satisfying spiritual meal look like? And it has nothing to do with worship songs. It has a lot to do with what you're looking for. Because in verse 2, David starts out, I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and your glory because your love is better than life. So David speaks of seeing God in his sanctuary. But where do I find God? God is everywhere, right? I mean, God is in my house, and God is in the park, and God is at the beach. God is in the mountains. God is everywhere that I go. So can I just meet God anywhere? I mean, he promised to never leave us. But when we feel distant, our soul begins to feel dry. We don't know where to begin, so we have to figure out, where do I find God? So we see that word sanctuary, and remember, David is an Israelite, so that term meant something to David. A sanctuary for David meant that is the tabernacle and later the temple, which was this designated space that God designed, filled with all of these things that God put out there and all of this stuff that when I walked in, that stuff was where I was supposed to meet God. God lived in the Holy of Holies. It was a place. But right now where David is, David couldn't physically see the sanctuary. So when I can't find a sanctuary, I have to focus on the moments, not the sacred places and objects. So when I begin to look at my life, what are the moments that I can actually find God? And this is David writing, so you know where he's going to go first, right? He begins with David saw God's power, God's glory, and God's love. Through his life experience, David discovers covenant loyalty, God's strength, his faithfulness, and his mighty mercy. As he begins to look at something, David realizes that God is more than anything else in my life. And that brings him to a moment that we like to try to define. It brings him to the idea of some redirected worship. David continues here, "My lips will glorify you, and I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift up my hands." And so what begins to happen as David begins to look for God and seek God, and he looks back on his life, he begins to worship God. Did he call for the band and the preacher? No, just worship erupted naturally. See, worship is not something we do to get God's attention. And we try this, okay? "Hey, God, I'm right here. Look, give me your attention. I'm going to sing you a song." You're not trying to get God's attention when you worship. Worship is what happens when God reveals who he is. When you actually see who God is, worship is the natural response. Just like when you're hungry, the natural response is to eat. When you see who God is, what you should actually happen is worship just kind of comes out. And if there was one thing David knew about, it was worship, right? And he begins with his mouth. But not a voice of singing. He says, "With my lips." Okay? Your lips have to open up. And his voice created an endless praise throughout his life. Is corporate worship important? It is for our church because it's where we gather together. But you understand, your corporate worship is supposed to be an extension of your lifestyle worship, not the other way around. If you struggle with corporate worship, then a lot of times what that means is you just don't have a lifestyle worship that goes with it. So when you come here, you're coming here starved. And so you try to feed yourself off of the music and off of generally speaking, 30-minute sermon. I know, I'm working on the 30-minute thing. Off of a communion meditation, off of a meal. You try to feed yourself with that, and then you leave, and just for a moment you're filled, but you might make it to the car, and then you're hungry again. That's because you didn't understand worship. You thought it wasn't an event or an activity. It's a lifestyle. Endless praise. He says, "I lift up my hands," and he's not talking about a posture in a song. Isn't that a great big thing that we love to discuss? Is it okay to lift your hands up? Is it okay to clap in church? Is it okay to do this? Is it okay to do that? David is not just lifting up his hands to make a gesture. He is not talking about that. It's a posture of life. He's lifting up empty hands. Nothing in them. "God, I'm coming to you. I don't have anything to give you. My hands are empty." You know what the good thing about empty hands are? There's lots of room to put something in it. If you come into worship holding on to stuff, you've got no way for God to hand you anything. Your hands are full. But not only are his hands empty, his hands are open. He's not clutching tight, no room for God. And most importantly, he's got expectant hands. Did you come here this morning expecting anything? Seriously. When you got up this morning and you said, "I'm going to church, this is church day," did you come into this building expecting to get anything from God? Or is this just the motion that you're going through? Is this just that thing that you've got on your calendar? This is where I'm supposed to be. See, when David talked about this, when he was all done, he was fully satisfied. All the way down to his soul. It filled him. Now, where is he? In the desert, still. What does that mean? All of those needs and all of those problems and all of those things, he is still struggling. But he's not distracted. He's not numb. He's not temporarily entertained. He's not just satisfied like a meal that nourishes us and like water that quenches. When you truly encounter God, our problems don't disappear, but they do kind of shrink. It gives you some perspective. They find their proper size in the shadow of his glory. When you stood in the presence of the creator of the universe, somehow my itty-bitty problem, while it is still a problem, isn't all that huge anymore, is it? I mean, if he can keep track of the birds, he can truly keep track of me, right? If he's got time to number the hairs on my head, he's got time for all the problems in my life. And then coming out of that, this is the beautiful part. David has consumed his meal. David has been in the presence of God, and he says, now I get to remember. On my bed I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night, because you are my help, and I sing in the shadows of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand uphold me. David says, I now get to remember who God is. When you go home today, what do you think you remember about your trip here today? Oh, was the sanctuary too cold or too hot? Was the sermon too long or just right? Were the songs too loud or too peppy or too slow? These are the things that we tend to take out of, and as we're going home and evaluating the worship service, these are our focus. But David says no. See, faith isn't just pretending yesterday never happened. Faith is believing in the valley, and you saw that true mountaintop. And so that means he meditates deeply on what he now knows is true. That's important. He recalls God's past help. That's important. He just flat out remembers that, you know what, this God I'm worshiping, that's who I need to cling to. That's the meal. That's the important thing. That's what's supposed to fill my life. And so my little hangry guy comes back, because now we have a question. Do you know what you're hungry for in your life? Do you know what the whole is? Do you understand? Why is it important that I know what the whole is? Because if I don't know what the whole is, then guess what I don't know? How I'm supposed to fill it. Psalm 63 is about recognizing that the hunger already existed in David's life. And then the question isn't whether you're hungry. The question becomes is, what are you going to reach for to make yourself not hungry anymore? More junk food, more activities, more events, more calendar, more work. What is it that you're going to fill it with? You've already tried all those things, haven't you? Did it work? That's something to ponder, isn't it? Because your soul will seek something. You are going to try to fill that hole. Your soul is going to cling somewhere. Your soul will be satisfied or frustrated. It only has two positions. Either you're living in satisfied or you're living in frustration. There is no in the middle. If I'm satisfied, it's because I filled it with the right things. If I'm frustrated, it's because I'm still trying to figure it out. And so here's the invitation. Psalm 63 invites us to stop pretending. Seriously. Admit it. I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. And then begin to seek God to fulfill those needs. And trust him that he's going to meet it. And remember, especially when you're in the desert and everything feels wrong, God is still there with you. Because here's the thing we forget often. We were made for him. This is your design. This is what God made you to be, was dependent in a relationship with him. Therefore, if you don't have that basic need, all the other needs will go unmet. Satisfaction will never happen. See, there's never going to be enough of the other stuff. Never enough activities. Never enough money. Never enough work. But there will always be just the right amount of God, because he'll make himself available.